not unlike this cell where they like pull the stuff off their faces.
Yeah.
He pulls the mask off of his face, the pretend mask that he's stolen mm-hmm. in this future vision. And he goes, which one of you wants to say it? Because it's like really good. Go for it.
Okay. I don't want to be a waiter.
I don't want to be a waiter. So it's the edges of things and life is like blurring together and her mom is there all of a sudden. And then it's the queen, actually. And then it's her mom again. And she's like, did I dream you a boyfriend?
She was like, no, he's gross, but he has an Irish accent. So I might like him.
I mean,
that's kind of the feel of it. So.
Oh, so she's trying to figure out where to go for this key. And she's like, well, if I've made this world, then I get to change it a bit. And so she was like, well, I would picture the building right over there. And
there would be a path to the building.
And then there it is.
Yeah.
And so she and
Valentine
just walk into the building where there is a what I have dubbed the key column.
Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of keyholes and they have a key. So they're like, well, I guess we just start trying to do all of these. But she looks through the window again mm-hmm. and she notices that her evil self is fighting with her dad.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, and because the evil self and her like see each other and her evil self like moves the paper that they're on.
Yeah, okay. So she starts putting the key in the various keyholes and the world shakes and she ends up looking out the window and sees the fight where her self is burning things in her bedroom in an apartment.
Right.
In a waste bin.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous. I can't imagine having such lenient parents. And I had pretty freaking chill parents, but burning stuff in my room in excess, like, no. Anyways, then her other self starts tearing down the world. And that's why it's shaking, is like all of these portals are being destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
There will soon be no way out, Helena.
Right. And so when everything settles, they find that their area has been moved into the Shadowland.
Yes, it's very isolated. And does Valentine leave?
Well, I think Helena's really distraught about how everything is playing out between evil her and her dad. And so
when the world shakes, when it's moved, she hits against the wall and her arm gets hurt. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go get help.
Yeah. That's
and then
that makes more sense than, you know, like sudden onset depression.
Yeah. No. And then that's why
betrayal.
Right. He grabs the key, kisses it. And then you're like, no.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. So she eventually gets up. She's probably looking through the window again. She gets black bag over the head.
Oh,
and then
okay.
It gets pulled up. And then she's with the queen.
She gets kidnapped.
Helena napped.
Yeah.
She should have taken a nap, but she got Helena napped. She's in front of the queen, who then asks her to apologize. And I don't know about you, but I've never been satisfied by a apology that has had to be asked for.
Right. Oh yeah, they're not the best apologies.
Tell me you're sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, ew.
Mm-hmm.
Ew.
Yeah.
No.
And so
I'm not your daughter. And then she eyeballs in the same way that the what's his face did, up and down, all the way down to mm-hmm. the slippers again, which she does that little cute twitch she does with her feet, and she's like, "You'll do."
Yeah. Then she was like, why are you trying to get your daughter back? And she was like, well, wouldn't you do anything for a pet? And a daughter is more than a pet. And in this scene, we see the Queen of Shadows. This is her motto. Like, you are mine. I possess you. I get to control you in every aspect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's a very common thing for any kid to feel like they don't have control in their life and that their parents just, you know, are possessing them and controlling them and telling them what to do. And that's very common for any kid.
I feel like on the road to being an adult, there comes a point where there's a way that your parents want you to act that is not in line with the actions of a budding adult.
Right. And one of the first things that you know as a kid is your parents are flawed.
It was a real hard pill for me.
But there's also this aspect of like grappling with the fact that there's a part of you that knows your parents are trying their best. I mean, not in all cases.
Yeah.
Some people just should not be taking care of kids. Point blank. End of discussion.
Yep.
That is not a bad hill to die on.
No.
But of the parents out there who are trying their hardest and do love their kids, I think as a kid, you do recognize at some point, my parents are not as perfect as I thought they were,
mm-hmm.
but they're still like, if you don't have any like animosity, of not holding on to any animosity towards your parents,
mm-hmm.
then you have this sort of realization of, so my parents aren't perfect, but they are trying as hard as they can.
Would you say that it's kind of a black and white situation?
Yeah.
You think that the duality of being a parent comes into play? You think that's a heavily used theme in this movie? You think maybe, just for a second, Lydia, you think maybe the fact that our parents are both sinners and saints? You think that we all eventually make whores and Madonnas out of all of our parents? You think... Actually, they're like controlling jerks, but they're also like this altruistic force that doesn't have to be kind to you, but chooses to be because of biological and social reasons, and also maybe genuine love. Like, maybe they're these glorious things, but also, like, here's the thing about humans, Lydia. They're the worst.
Oh, I know.
But here's the thing, Lydia. Humans, they're like the best. They're both. I mean, I've said it before, like, we are neither all sinner and we are not all saint. You are somewhere delightfully gray, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But we, especially when we're young, we just have these very stark, and it's the tragedy of like an emerging mind. You only have these polar opposites, you know?
Right.
What is good? What is bad? The moral relativism hasn't set in yet.
Right. Because you're still figuring that out because you're a kid.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So in this conversation, Helena's last ditch effort is to say, Valentine will save me. And then she's like, oh, Valentine.
She goes, that's right. I almost forgot. Valentine, can you come in here? He turns around from the door. He's got a fancy hat on.
He got his fancy hat.
With a feather in it. Call him Mac a fucking Roni.
Coward.
So he's like, I was going to get a reward. And like, you see Helena's, she's breaking. She's like, you were supposed to be this wonderful, glorious thing.
Yeah.
And
turns out you're more human than I realized.
Right. So the visually, I loved how the queen was like, oh, yes. He's like, Jules, as many as I could carry. And she goes, if I must. She snaps her fingers. And then all of these rubies roll up all of the soot sprites from any kind of Ghibli deal.
Yeah.
And like, he like starts shoving them in his pockets and he holds them up and he's just like, and she's like, I would like to spend some time with my daughter now.
Right.
And he just yoinks out.
Helena does yell at him and calls him a coward who stole all of the cakes. And he was like, hey.
I did not hog that cake.
Doesn't not call himself a coward, though.
Totally a coward.
Yeah. It reminds me of the Hoggle scene when he gives Jennifer Connelly the, was it a drink? Something he put in a drink?
A peach.
Oh, it was a peach. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, peaches later. Peaches themes. But also, did you notice that the glass orbs back in the behind the scenes part of the beginning of the movie were the like Bowie orbs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I loved that.
Yeah.
As the world went down... Bob. You guys just don't know, but like a flutters, I'm like dancing like I'm manipulating glass orbs.
Right.
Bob.
Yeah.
Okay. So, did you notice the evil queen goes, whoosh, whoosh, quality time?
Yeah.
I was like, did you just air quotes me, lady? You don't know me.
And then we get into this beautiful sequence.
Yeah, because she's like, you know what you need. You need a pretty frock and a happy smile. And why is that? And Helena's like, I have no idea. And then like the guard's like, because we have no place to, I don't know this line, but it's something like, we have no place to sit with Mr. Frowntown.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's so stupid.
Yeah. So Helena gets shuttled away to this room and we don't see how she gets in. We don't see how she gets out. So, but it's a dream, so we don't have to.
Yeah, we got a bunch of clocks on the walls and all of these silver music boxes on the floor that are fairly large. They're probably 4 feet by 3 feet. Okay, so she walks in. She's very curious. And then the cue the music and all of the boxes open and these derelict baby doll faced human mouth, the weird mouth screens that are on a bunch of like the denizens of this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts singing Why Do Birds Suddenly Appear, which is a song that the cat sings. Or references in Red Dwarf. I don't care. I'm going back to Red Dwarf every time I can. Why is there a 6-month waiting list for birds to appear every time that I am near? That's one of my favorite quotes of all time. And then it's this beautifully weird glow up scene, right? Mm-hmm. And there are these hands that don't ever really touch her that like are gold covered and like they like wave around her as things change. But did you notice the first thing that happens is one spreads its hand out thusly, applauders you can't see, but I'm doing a grand sweeping gesture, right? And then gold glitter flies over and you see her get like insta-stoned.
Mm-hmm.
Does it not look exactly like the catnip from Cats?
Yeah.
She got catnipped.
Yeah.
And then it was like, what? Except it's creepy, so it's like, why do birds suddenly, except it's higher pitched and it's much more fragile than my voice sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You get all my vocal fry guys, but like it's like, why do birds?
Yeah,
it's like it's beautiful, and I couldn't find it on Spotify, but it's a great
I'd be surprised if you couldn't go to YouTube, type in mirror mask, why do birds suddenly appear? And then I'm sure you'll find something.
Yeah.
It's the one with the creepy dolls in it.
Yes.
This would have been Carl's favorite scene from The Cell.
He'd be like, very pretty. It's not real.
But also, Cell reference, did you notice that she got a beautiful dark lip?
Yeah. Also, she got, like, her hair got updoed like her mom's, or like her mom's.
Yeah, and she got a beautiful handmade collar.
Mm-hmm. He makes them for him. He makes him feel special. Makes him feel like he owns them.
Yeah. When this entire sequence is done, I lingered on Helena at the very end, and it looks like she's floating.
Yeah, she's definitely spinning as if she were part of the music box, mm-hmm. a music box herself. I, of this scene, find very little flaw because it's beautiful and creepy like it's supposed to be. But also, I will go back to my long-held belief that the Anna Nicole Smith show where she sleeps in a chair while her makeup stylist does her makeup is my ultimate moneyed person persona. I don't want to be a billionaire. I don't think you can be ethically a billionaire, but I would like a pile of money and to give that money to someone who will apply a beautiful cat's eye to me while I slumber.
Right. Have enough money to where you can afford to have someone who applies makeup to you while you sleep.
I will pay you for that.
Yeah, that's like a decent livable wage. Like, imagine if that was just your job. You didn't have to work at anywhere else. You just had to creep into someone's house every night for like an hour.
I'll wake up. Like, I'll wake up enough to come downstairs. I'll brush my teeth for you. But then I'm going to fall asleep in that recliner and you just apply my rouge and my dark lip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like an hour before you get up.
Yeah.
And it may not even have to be super early. You generally don't get up like what? Do you normally get up after 9?
It depends. I'm unemployed right this second, so like I have not been getting up before 9.
If you didn't have to worry about money.
If I didn't have to worry about money, I would like to think that I would naturally get up around 8. So I wouldn't mind climbing into the chair at 7.
Right.
And then, oh, could you imagine, Jen? We could have breakfast at 8:30 with me with like a dark lip, just sipping my tea just ever so.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be like, "That's why do you have like full makeup on right now?" And I'd be like, it was just wonderful. It's just Helena recommended a lady and she just comes in.
While we're sleeping?
I will go to a different room. But Jen, you'd probably want the same treatment.
The Anna Nicole Smith treatment?
Well, that sounds real dark because she's real dead. But what I mean is that she hired a makeup person to come in and do her makeup for her. And it was like it was the thing I saw on her show that I was like, yes, I do want that. And she gets this by getting stoned with some catnip and getting to like spin around while hands are like around her.
I think this is where the Elon Musk robots of the future are going to help us out.
Okay. And I will leave this here. And this is not the hill I want to die on. But me hiring a makeup person to make me look my best while I'm unconscious is not nearly as self-indulgent as like going to space.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. We can move on.
So
wall peeping.
Oh, no, not yet.
Not yet.
The Shadow Queen has what she wants. Helena is pretty much under mind control, but she's still kind of cheeky. At moments, because this is the scene where they're talking at dinner.
Oh, have we? Because my notes go, Valentine regrets. So I think what happens is she gets her makeover. The mom, the dark mom is like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's looking at her through the wall and then
it's a montage.
She steps away and like does a little, she's like holding her arms and she's like, yes, everything I've ever wanted. The Valentine is walking down an alleyway and he sees the wanted poster and he pulls out a rub and he's like, it's a pretty rock, but not as beautiful as you.
Yeah.
In his mind, he doesn't actually say anything.
He does look at a wanted poster and he's like, this is what I got for betraying a friend.
Yeah. And then he crumples it into a little rose and then that rose blows away in little petals. And it's a very beautiful moment.
Then he finds his way back to the key room.
Yes.
And he starts like trying every lock and then marking it off.
Well, yes. And they intersplice that with Helena playing with dolls that I think are supposed to be her and her mom. If mm-hmm. I'm honest, it
yeah.
looks real weird. While the mom plays like a harp, like a creepy harp.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the key columns and he ingeniously, and I would never think of this, but he like tries a keyhole, marks it with a pencil. Tries a keyhole, marks it with a pencil.
Yeah.
I do. I like that. I might as well come out. I'm a bit of a sapiosexual.
Yeah.
If you show me you're a genius with a bit of a heart of gold, I don't know if that falls into that. Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. So they're at a dinner scene and they're, you know, having their back and forth, and it's very puppetous. It's very like scripted. And then you hear rumblings and everything. And the Shadow Queen's like, oh, what's that? And then she coughs out some eye bats.
Yes. But before this, Valentine does find the note. He does manage to find key that opens. I think it's beautiful, a beautiful visual. He puts the key in and it pulls out a drawer that encompasses a lot of different keyholes. And then he opens up and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, the mirror mask. Right. And he opens it up and it's a note.
Yeah.
From the Dark Princess. And she's like, wah, wah, wah.
I know it's going to destroy everything, but I don't care. I got to get away from you. This is kind of like a natural response for any teenager to have when you have a parent who's constantly trying to control everything that teenager is doing.
Yeah. And I think the last line of the note is something akin to, and you can't help but make people's lives, somebody's life has to fall apart for you to get away. Something like that. It seems very poignant. To get away, you're going to destroy somebody. And it's going to be the world that everyone is in.
Yeah.
Now we're at the table and mom pukes up
the other mother.
She hawks a loogie. She straight up, it's just one, instead of like the continuous vomit column from before.
Yeah.
She's like, just hawks one bird to go find out why the world's shaking. She offers her daughter ice cream, and she's like, I've had sufficient. And it's just terrible.
Yeah.
And then she's like, what's going on? Helena's like, you know, the Dark Princess. She's destroying the world. She's destroying all the portals. And it's all because of you, because you kind of suck. She's like, what? How dare you? How dare you? And then she's like, sorry, Mama. Yes, Mama. Shall I have some more ice cream now?
Yes. And then
that was me choking on the scene, not on her puking up more death birds.
And then Helen goes outside to play with this glowy ball that she has.
Yeah, and she misses it. It rolls down the steps and re-enter Valentine.
Yeah, trying to say he's sorry, but doesn't actually say he's
sorry. What if I said what if I said something apologetic? And I'm like, first of all, you, Valentine. But then also, that's really cute. And Valentines don't ever apologize. Yeah. So I get it. I get it. You know how you're going to solve this, Lydia?
Juggling?
Yeah. The power of juggling. He throws the ball and she catches it and she's got the dead eyes because they're all black, which only makes me think of demons from Supernatural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she throws it back at him and he catches it and he's like, well. And then he's like, And then he throws it again. And now they're juggling.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's back.
Yeah.
To let you know that he can really shake him down.
Do you love me? So, and then they go to the Shadow Princess's room, and he's just like, we've looked all over this place.
She managed to sneak a boy into her room. How incredibly 15 years old is she? but we also intersplice with this meeting of Dark Lands creatures with the Dark Queen, and this one ogre guy is just like, the pit of despair has completely disappeared. Like, it's just not there anymore.
Yeah.
And which makes me think of Princess Bride.
Yes.
Which is another thing that we reviewed. Reference number 4 or 8 or whatever.
That poor albino, he was, you know, without a job after that.
It's true. But also she's peeping through the holes at the mother doing this thing. So it's a two-way peephole into her room.
But the peephole is a mirror.
That's true. And on the other side, I think it's a portrait.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So all of a sudden, my third favorite character comes in, Ducupine.
Little fun note, David McKean, the director, does the motion capture for this character.
It's got a solid little scully beak. He's got quills all down his back, and he walks like a little man. He's got suspenders.
Yeah.
I want to cuddle him so bad.
He reminds me of Warwick Davis for some reason.
That was a note that I had, and then I looked it up, and then I had to cross it out. Because you know how Warwick Davis does all of this, all of this stuff?
Whenever he'd do motion capture for something like this, I can imagine, yeah.
Right, but then it wasn't, and I was like...
Do you think it's the wild mane of dark quills that look a little bit like the hair on him and Willow?
I don't know. I think it's mostly just my own experience with Warwick Davis taking on these roles.
So we don't get a name for him, I don't think.
No.
He's so cute, though.
Mm-hmm.
Third favorite character.
He's also kind of put upon.
He's just a slub.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a guy with a job.
Right.
I mean, like, as much as you can't forgive Nazis for, like, doing what they're ordered to do.
Okay, so I don't agree with the way that the Shadow Queen is treating her daughter. That is definitely bad. But I wouldn't call her, like, a fascist, because she still seems to be understanding with the people around her. We just have kind of equated darkness with being evil for the longest time. And I wouldn't say that that's necessarily...
It's just the other side of the paper.
Right.
And that's fine. And I think there are plenty of controlling parents who aren't fascists.
Yeah.
It seems like she's trying to keep her kingdom in order. She doesn't get why is it all burning down.
But after Ducupine leaves, Helen's thinking about, like, where would I hide something in my room?
She has Valentine reread the note.
Mm-hmm.
And then she pulls out a very useful book.
Yeah.
She's like, there's only one page left. And Valentine is like, the most useless of pages.
And then she opens it up and says, remember what your mother said.
She goes, when you're looking for something, it's usually staring you right in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we are supposed to remember the fact that her aunt Nan lost her teeth and put them in the fridge.
Yeah.
But also she's like, stares you right in the face. And she looks around and then she's like, I've been looking in a mirror this mm-hmm. entire time. So she goes,
where would I hide a mirror mask? It would be in a mirror.
Right. So then she shoves her face into a mirror. And it's a beautiful effect, you mm-hmm. have to admit. It's very much like her face enters the mirror. She pulls back. The glass comes with her. And then it snaps away. And she has this beautiful silver mask.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the movie ends.
Yeah, nothing else happens except for an escape.
Yes, they make a mad dash away. And it's so funny because, like, as soon as she gets home, she gets very little supervision.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty impressed.
Yeah.
So as they're running, Valentine is screaming, if you recall. He's like, run! Don't look back! Keep on course! Let nothing distract you! Run, 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 run! Oh, look at this. Did yeah. you notice? It was amazing. I think they could have landed it a little harder, but it was like, once I noticed that's what happened, I was like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So he's like, oh, and he walks over to this, it's huge, like one of those giant pumpkin-sized things, and he's like, oh, and he starts peeling. It's very satisfying mm-hmm. the way he peels these layers back, and Helen is looking at him like, what the hell are you doing? We're trying to save the world.
And then this lady shows up and is like, oh, is he one of the scholars? She's like, oh, is this a man of great importance? And she was like, no.
She's this old woman with this bunny looking mask that has like with like a cube between the ear parts at the top of the mask. She's very cute mm-hmm. and she's very solicitous about it. She's like, oh, so why does he want the future fruit? And she's like, what happens is the great scholars eat the future fruit. And then sometimes they write tremendous books. It's amazing. And it cuts back to Valentine, who's peeled all of this huge, I mean, really, like one of those 500-pound pumpkins away down to a single peach. And in the behind the scenes, it turns out they only had one peach on set. So he had to do it in one take. And he's really lucky he did. He's like, why do they call it future fruit?
Because it takes you into the future, my love.
He's like, it is delicious, right?
Yeah. And then his like brain goes into the future and he sees himself holding the mirror mask. Helena is looking out the mirror asking for the mask. And he's like, no, if this world's end, I'm just going to go ahead and make an escape.
Yeah, this is the only way out. I'm going to take it. He shoves her out of the way, puts the mask on, and then boop.
He comes into our world. And then he's just like a regular guy.
He's like, what is this? He's not prepared at all. He ends up being a waiter in an Indian restaurant. And he's like, I don't know about you, but the chaos of being in a restaurant sometimes, especially as waitstaff. I mean, I've never been waitstaff, but I have worked in a restaurant for a brief period of time. And I've been to enough restaurants, God knows,
mm-hmm.
that like the chaos of moving around that environment. He like backs away, the terror on his face as like this bad Indian music plays in like this British restaurant. He like backs into the kitchen where he drops an entire tray of champagne and a plate and an entire tray of food. And he's like, ah! And he like, not unlike this cell where they like pull the stuff off their faces.
Yeah.
He pulls the mask off of his face, the pretend mask that he's stolen mm-hmm. in this future vision. And he goes, which one of you wants to say it? Because it's like really good. Go for it.
Okay. I don't want to be a waiter.
I don't want to be a waiter. Is exactly right. So funny. Porcupine. Yeah.
Porcupine.
Ducupine. Oh, yeah. Ducupine wanders to the meeting and he like stands and he's like, oh, man. And they're like, things are going terrible. We haven't. Infrastructure's bad. Hard. And like, and he's like, miss, I need you. And then she's like, shut up to everybody at the table. And she's like, she turns and she goes real close. She's like, what? And Ducupine, you know what he says? He goes, remember the first time that the princess ran away? And the queen's like, the first time. Gaiman, you snarky son of a I love you so much.
So good.
Yeah.
Helena and Valentine are running, and then it actually cuts to the doors that they made the escape from. You see black tentacle stuff heading out.
Yes. This is now, the next scene is Beholder Mom.
Mm-hmm.
So they're running across. They've managed to make it to a wide field. Helena rips her dress and is like, stupid dress, because she's not like other girls.
Mm-hmm.
And or apparently is like, needs to take time out of this moment to let us know about her garb.
Yeah.
The Beholder Mom's like.
Yeah, she's gaining. She catches up to him and she surrounds him with all of the tentacles. And Helena tries to plead with her to just let them go so they can save the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that she's really just asking so much of her daughter and she just needs to let her daughter make her own decisions.
So what you're telling me, so the mother beholder says, she goes, so what you're telling me is I need to let my daughter choose what she eats and wears and does and thinks and says and try not to possess her?
Yes.
I don't think so. Isn't that right? Something
yeah.
It's like a Vogon. So what you're telling me is that I really just want to be loved?
Yes. Yes, your Vogonity. I think that's reference number 27. Also, you brought in Martin Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
Honey. Okay. Okay. So then Valentine's. Oh, no. Did you do this on the front? Valentine says, give me the mask. And Helena's
no, not yet.
Oh.
Their only real escape is Valentine's tower. And Helena is like, Valentine, you need to call your tower. And he's like, I don't want to talk to Valentine's. Don't ever say sorry. And she was just like, do it. And he's just like, all right, I'm sorry.
Well, he says, give me your mask.
Oh.
And then he's like, give me the light. Which is the thing that was referenced last when we first met our first Sphinx. He goes, this is how we used to, I don't know how, this was how they used to signal each other. But he shines the flashlight at the mask. It sends up what looks like the hitchhiker's thumb in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, a beam of light straight into the sky. He's like, this was how we signaled before. I don't know why it's not coming. And she goes, maybe you should just apologize. And he's like, and that's when he goes,
I'm sorry. And then the tower comes down, saves them, and they make an escape point two.
Yes. Perfect. And now she has the mask. She has a building, which has tons of, guess what? Windows.
She motions, and she needs to put the mirror mask on while she's looking out the window.
Because she thinks that's going to, because if she can see the Dark Princess, she should be able to get to her. She needs that portal. She needs that connection.
Right. And so she's like, Valentine, give me the mask. And it was just like what he saw in the future. But in this future, he gives her the mask.
Because he learns something.
He doesn't want to be a waiter.
Exactly. Exactly. Which means the future is not predestinated.
Right.
Destinated. Predesignated. Predestined. Predetermined is the word.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she has the mask. She's about to go through it. But that's when we see all of these windows getting crumpled up and taken out.
Yeah.
And like we're outside of the dream world and we're inside real world. And we see the Dark Princess taking all of these things.
They're all gone now. Something I will not go back.
She takes them outside because her dad chewed her out for lighting up stuff inside the house.
She tries to light like three different matches. They all go off because she's on a fudging windy rooftop.
Right. And so she takes all of them and she just scatters them and she twirls and she laughs and cackles. But then she turns around and she sees one more window.
It turns out that if you use some charcoal on the, why she never got yelled at for this, I do not know. And why she was allowed on unsecured rooftop, I do not know. It seems very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But there's another drawn mirror. And there in that mirror is our Helena. And then you just see all of the hope drain out of Bad Princess's face.
Yeah. So Helena puts on the mask and she wakes up outside in her PJs and her bunny slippers.
Well, there's a beautiful smushy face scene.
What happens is
she's like, I don't want to go back. And she's like, you don't get to make the decision, something like that. It really doesn't matter. She puts the mask on. The Dark Princess is like magnet swooped to the mirror. And then it does this really cool, and I only bring it up because it's very cool how it's like half her face, half the mirror face.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turns to the side. And then we transition to her sleeping on the roof.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, and okay, so like then we cut to the queen waking up.
Oh, yeah.
And now we're back to Roof sleeping. Then Dad shows up.
Mm-hmm. And he's like, what are you doing outside?
This is a weird place to sleep. And I'm like, all right, Goofy. This is not the Goofy movie.
Her dad is so goofy.
Yeah. He's like, oh, yuck, how did you end up on the roof? Like, dumb and happy. I get it. I'm there for you. But like, oh, come on, Dad.
Yeah.
But then he's like, come on, we'll get you inside. He puts his jacket on her again. Mm-hmm. And then the phone rings. She reaches the pocket, pulls out. Guess what?
It's the hospital.
It's a flip phone.
Yeah, it is, because it's 2005.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But it's the hospital.
And he turns away.
Yeah.
I get why he does. And this is actually pretty good in that the sound cuts out. And she's like, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, God. Oh,
yeah,
no.
She's like, please.
And he's
please.
Just like nodding into the phone. He's like, okay, all right, okay. Mm-mm. Turns around and she's like, please. And he's like,
they got it all.
She's going to be okay.
Yeah.
She's going to be fine.
Yeah. So mom is okay. And then they hug. Yeah,
he says to her, we're going to be fine. And then it cuts to a card that says, and they were. Mm-hmm. And then it's a circus sign where like a mom and daughter are hugging. And I'm like, what show is this now? How did you evolve from like juggling and gorillas and like Spanish webs? And now it's a mother-daughter show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Right.
Okay.
But that's not the important part. The important part is that it's 8 months later.
I guess so. Yeah. Like mom is back in the booth taking ticket money. Mm-hmm. And
Helena's juggling outside.
Right. She like taps on the glass and like blows a kiss or whatever. And then a guy steps up to the window and he's like, I've always dreamt about running away and joining the circus. And she goes,
He runs into Helen, like, just like, you know,
he talks to the mom first.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He steps up to the window to buy his ticket and mm-hmm. he says, I've always dreamt about running away to join the circus. And the mom says, you have to be 18. You have to pass the audition, she says. And then you have to be insane.
Yeah.
And he's like, ha ha ha, and walks away. And as he's like walking away, then he runs smack into Helena.
Yeah. And he catches one of the balls that she's juggling.
Because it flies up in the air.
Yeah.
And I like it.
Yeah.
I don't even care. No shame. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Yeah.
And then he catches it. The two of the other balls, she had three, like two fall to the ground. He catches the one and he's like, I've always dreamt about it. I was talking to the lady at the booth and she goes, my mother.
The lovely lady in the booth.
Said I dreamt about running away to join the circus. And she goes, I'll let you have it.
That's great. You would make a lousy waiter.
And she laughs and he's like, ah,
what? That's where it ends.
Roll credits. Like,
why?
Gaiman. Gaiman? Okay, you kind of shoehorned in the romance at the end a little bit. I'm okay with it. It's fine. My favorite part of the credits, did you notice, is that they line up the faces and the roles.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. As a visual person, it's hard for me to remember names, especially when we've gotten all the way to the credits.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm like, face and names? And they've got like three different names mm-hmm. because a lot of them had multiple roles.
Yeah.
But then later on, when they get to the animators, the people who ran textures on stuff, they're listed by the things that they did in the film, too.
Mm-hmm.
It is a delightful, and why don't we do this more?
Mm-hmm.
What, it was innovative.
Yeah.
I want to know what hats you wore. Do you have a Sean fact about that?
Oh, no. I remember in the, I think it was in the special features, that David, the director, had assigned the artists, like, entire scenes to do by themselves. And that's why we could have that kind of credit. Most of the time, you're like, you're working on a face. You're working on all the faces or all the costumes or the scenery. And you don't get that option of really creating a fully envisioned environment.
Mm-hmm. All right. All right. So awesome. Who would you recommend this movie to?
Everyone. I mean, like, I remember showing this movie to my family because it was my birthday and I wanted to show it to them. It was like back when it came out on DVD. I think we rented it or something. But this was not a movie that my family enjoyed, mostly because, like, I have a sister who, and you, if you're listening to this, you know who you are, made kind of a snarky comment about, like, this is the movie that you don't need drugs for, you know, something like that. And I'm like, come on. Like, there are deeper layers here. Come on.
Yeah, I think it's got a delightful number of layers. I would certainly would show this to almost any angsty teenager.
Mm-hmm.
I dealt with a lot of teenagers and being like, hey, hi, I know that your age sucks right now. I get it. You want to do all the adult things, but you're still a child. You want to mm-hmm. do all the child things, but you're too much an adult. I said that earlier, but like, it's true. And here's the thing I told my kids. I was like, you aren't meant to live with your parents forever. That means that you have to be distinctly different people.
Mm-hmm.
With different ideas and different wants in your life. I mean, but you can get along while you grow that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I would show this movie to a kid and be like, hey, hi. The second you realize that your parents are kind of that black and white area we were talking mm-hmm. about earlier, right?
Yeah.
The second you realize there's that duality there, you now have a responsibility for your part of that relationship. It is no longer mommy and daddy taking care of you. They are no longer this ultra villain who's only out to get you. Now they're humans like you are.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to start treating them like that.
Right.
Your mom has a sick body and she may be sick again, but you're in this together for now till you're 18 at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe help your dad out.
Yeah.
I mean, she was trying. She was doing pretty good until she got sucked into the other world.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I would show this really to anybody for the visuals. It certainly was a great birthday movie. I'm so sorry. It took me forever to begrudgingly accept that, but this movie's fantastic.
It is wonderful.
How about you, Jen? Who are you going to give this to?
I think that it really fits within sort of a trilogy for Henson. So for me, if I was a parent trying to share my enjoyment of Jim Henson Studios, I wouldn't directly go to the Muppets, depending on the age of the child. You know, if they are a teenager, they might be ready to watch Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, Mirror Mask.
I would probably do Labyrinth, Dark Crystal, Mirror Mask in that order.
If I was doing like sequentially by year, Dark Crystal was first and then Labyrinth.
I was thinking developmental wise. I would show like a, yeah, I would show in that order. Plus, like, it's softer to land on Labyrinth, and then like Dark Crystal's a little more harsh, I think. And this one has a lot of like different themes that kind of, depending on the kid, need a little bit of talking through.
It's the Jim Henson Recognizing Your Responsibility trilogy.
Oh, yeah.
So I have one more final Sean fact for you. Ooh. It is a Neil Gaiman quote. Mirrors are wonderful things.
Mm.
They appear to tell the truth, to reflect life back out at us. But set a mirror correctly and it will lie so convincingly, you'll believe something has vanished into thin air. That a box filled with doves and flags and spiders is actually empty. That people hidden in the wings or the pit are floating ghosts upon the stage. Angle it right and a mirror becomes a magic casement. It can show you anything you can imagine and maybe a few things you can't. Stories are in one way or another mirrors. We use them to explain to ourselves how the world works or how it doesn't. Like mirrors, stories prepare us for the day to come. They distract us from the things in the darkness. Fantasy is a mirror, a distorting mirror, and a concealing mirror set at 45 degrees to reality, but a mirror nonetheless, which we use to tell ourselves things we might not otherwise see. And that's it.
He's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I like how he put a little Scooby-Doo in there.
Yeah.
Those ghosts, that was just mirrors.
So I think we're at our shocked and applaud moments.
I believe you are correct.
Anyone specifically want to go first with theirs?
Mine are never good.
All right.
So I'll start with mine.
Okay.
I'll start with my applaud moment. Accurate teenage portrayal?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one time, Jen and I sat down to watch Fear of the Walking Dead, right? And because I love a zombie, whatever. And the first probably three episodes or more, they have these teenagers who are like, but I can't go with you because the world is ending because my boyfriend's sick. He got bit by something and I don't know what's going on, but I have to go rescue him. And then like they ditch out of their parents and they like go like get themselves bit or whatever. I know enough teenagers that, or at least I have known enough teenagers, they can be reasoned with. Like very seldomly do you come across somebody, anyone who doesn't have at least some nuance. And so when a teenager, and here's the thing, I wasn't a fan of being one. I wasn't a fan of hanging out with them when I was one. I got along okay with my youth kids. I love them a whole lot, but it wasn't because they were teenagers. That's a hard age. But never once did I think even the lesser intelligent of the kids I knew, never was any of them unnuanced. Each one of them had something going on. It was very rarely do you ever come across somebody who's blank behind the eyes, you know? So the fact that she has layers, that she, there's lots of things going on, that if we were to combine her and the Dark Princess self, it forms a very complete picture of what a whole human being is, because we are so very inclined as human beings to dismiss these little children, mm-hmm. adults, these baby adults.
Yeah.
Teenagers are just baby adults.
Right.
And they should be treated fairly in media. And the fact that she got to be a whole person,
mm-hmm.
that pleased me a great deal.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman also had originally, when he was starting to think of the story of this, or maybe it's just something he had as an idea before starting to write this with David, that there was a desire for him to write sort of a Prince and the Pauper from a princess sort of view, but it would be more fantastical, like it would be one person who split off into a common girl and a princess, and then kind of joined back together at the end somehow.
I like that. Applause from you?
I know what my shocked moment is, but I don't know what my applaud moment is. Jen, do you know what yours is?
I think that going into this initially, I think I was incredibly disappointed the first time I saw it with the lack of puppetry. I went in thinking, okay, this is Jim Henson Studios. There's going to be puppets in here. And instead, I got something that it did remind me of like Reboot or Transformers Primal or whatever that one, the one where all the Transformers are animals. But now seeing it multiple times over the years, I think it has a specific, it's an art style that we don't usually get out of the CG that we see now. Like everything, especially with like deepfakes and that kind of thing, everything is trying to be hyper-realistic. And this went the other way. And that is because of the vision of some really brilliant people. Both the people that initially had the dream and the artists that took that dream and actualized it. And for $4 million, you can't make a better movie than this, I don't think. It's top-notch, not just for the day that it was set in. It's a quality Henson movie.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Don't be stepping on my applaud moment. Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
Take a deep breath and let your joy.
Okay.
Let your joy in.
I love everything about this movie.
Yeah.
Like, and that's my applaud moment. It's just the entire movie. Like, this is so close to perfection as far as, like, I remember when it first came out that, you know, everybody just hated the visuals, but it's like, it's exactly, you know, what Jen said is that over time with how everything is progressing with graphics, that is not a bad thing. And everything else just comes together so well. The acting, could you have done this with more well-known actors and gotten the same performance? I think, yeah. But sometimes when you have those well-known actors, it takes away from the performance because of the fact that they're so well-known.
Like when they put Stephen Fry behind the image of the librarian, you don't lose your Stephen Fry.
Right. And it's one of those things where you don't see his face.
Mm-hmm.
You don't like it, you can very easily just kind of dissociate from the fact that that is Stephen Fry.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy to do that. But like, imagine, I'm trying to think of like 2005. Like, imagine if Anne Hathaway did the role of Helena.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, like, I think she could really nail it.
Yeah, she would.
But it's still Anne Hathaway and it's such a big role. I mean, Stephanie Leonidas.
Mm-hmm.
She's probably really big in the UK, but like every time I watch this, to me, that's not an actor. That is Helena.
She has, because of that anonymity that she had, she got to give a much more raw performance.
Right. And then you have the incredible direction, the cinematography, the costumes.
The fact that it was probably all on a blue screen.
The writing.
Green screen.
Yeah.
It was all on green screen and they got all of that out of these guys.
Yeah. But it's also like... You know how in The Cell I was talking about how maybe two characters get actual arcs? Most people just have their beliefs tested. And I didn't make that seem like it was a bad thing. In this movie, everybody has character development, except for the queens and the prime minister. But the main characters, the people that were with Helena Valentine, they go through this character arc. And everybody else is just background. They're not round characters, they're flat characters.
Yeah, like they're NPCs.
Right. But like in the other one, we have so many characters who you could say are rounded and are important to the plot. Everybody else, like, well, I guess you could say that they're, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I love this entire movie. It's the closest, it's one of those movies that's like closest to perfection that I think we're ever going to get. And I will probably defend the visuals until I am dead because it works so well.
You want to go? You said you had a solid shock. Do you want to go with it?
This movie doesn't get nearly as much love. I hated the fact that it only got, it didn't make its money back. It didn't even break a million. That is the worst. I know humanity can be the best, but give this movie more love.
Yep. You're not wrong.
Okay. I'm done.
Great.
Jen?
I only have one small little thing that
One small tiny little Jen fact.
It's not a, it's, well, it is a fact.
Just making fun of the size
it
of your
fact. It is a fact that the Jason Barry and Stephanie
Leonidas.
They're 12 years apart.
Oh!
She was 21 when she filmed this, but she's playing a 15-year-old. And when the real Valentine at the end walks in and he says, I want to join the circus, his mom is in the ticket booth and she says, well, you got to be over 18. And this is like a maybe 16-year-old at this point. And he's at least... admittedly 18, maybe into his 20s. So maybe that tension doesn't really need to be there.
I mean, it's fine. She doesn't seem interested in making out with somebody yet. Because she's like, ew. Right?
Ew, David.
Yeah. But I feel you on that. I mean, you and I, and probably Lydia too, and I hope most of our, if not all of our listeners.
My audible groan.
Yeah, like, we don't sexualize minors.
Right.
We don't like that. We hate that. So I don't know what the rules are in the UK. Some places, even in the United States, 17. But here's the thing. I was talking to a coworker before I didn't have any coworkers. And he was like, I can't remember. It was a beautiful conversation. But here's what it boiled down to. Your 18th birthday doesn't make you an adult.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the eyes of the law, sure. But I think in terms of like mental development, there is not an exact day when it switches or there needs to be better evaluation. Mm-hmm. It's not a date on the calendar. Like, did you watch The Good Place?
Not yet.
Okay, first of all, it's amazing. And when you get to the fourth season, you're introduced to this one guy who is, or the guy who made the countdown watch for the, what's the little girls from Full House, the twins?
Oh, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen.
Okay, so he was the guy who invented the Olsen countdown clock. And it's one of the reasons he deserves to be in the Bad Place.
I need to make a sound and it's going to gross a lot of people out.
Okay. I'm just saying that Olsen countdown clock thing being a reason. Okay, that's what I'm saying. I just don't like it. Babies are babies. That being said, like, romance is weird too. Like, I fell in love very young.
Mm-hmm.
But when a youth kid came up to me and was like, I'm a week away from the age you were when you started dating Jen, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
No, you are a fetus. That is wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? But Jen and I's development, like, we wanted to be boyfriend and girlfriend, but, like, the development of that was staggered over quite some time. Like, and it came to us, like, I think for the most part, in, like, a natural progression. So, like, okay, you can have romantic feelings when you're still a child.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I'm agreeing with you. Like, the whole, he had to have been at least 18-ish.
If I was a filmmaker, I would be very careful. I guess this is the sort of the entirety of my comment on the shocked thing. I would be very careful on perpetuating the stereotype that young teenage girls want to go out with this college level guy, because there's a whole lot of grooming going on with that kind of stuff.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. You're absolutely right. Like, yeah, when you're having a conversation with somebody, and I used to have this conversation, but like the whole, if they're 2 years apart, it doesn't matter. If they are 17, but they are 19, mm-hmm. like I used to be like, well, they're still 2 years apart, so it's fine.
Right.
I don't agree with myself anymore.
Right.
Like, I mean, now I'm in agreement with myself in that I don't believe that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it would make a lot of young ones very mad, but.
I will say this as someone who had a lot of crushes on men who were 10 years older than me.
Oh, yeah.
It is not a healthy place to be in. And this, like, I remember watching a show and someone had mentioned kind of having this, there were characters having this conversation. And one of the characters said, if you are not attracted to someone who is around your own age, then you may have a problem. And I took that and I was like, I'm never attracted to anybody my own age. Is that just because I'm trying to like be mature or I'm trying to go for something more mature?
Mm.
But now you know who Ben Barnes is?
Don't.
He plays the Darkling in the Shadow and Bone series.
No idea.
Well, he's an attractive actor who's 6 feet tall, and every time he smiles, he makes my heart go pitter patter.
Get it.
He's around my age, and I'm like, I'm mature.
Okay. Let us put a caveat on this whole discussion just now, because I agree with what you said. I agree with what Jen said. Also, I think that as we enter adulthood, right, the difference between a 30-year-old and a 50-year-old is way, way, way different between a 15-year-old and an 18-year-old.
Right.
Because, like, maturity speeds up through adolescence. And then once you've reached like an adulthood, like after 25,
mm-hmm.
after 25, those distances get smaller, even if the age gaps get bigger. Like, I'm never mad if somebody's like over 25 and is with somebody significantly older. I feel like you've had time to adult enough.
Right.
That you can make those kinds of decisions. It's just. Mm.
Well, and I don't want to make it seem like if you're a teenager who is listening to this podcast right now, I am not trying.
God bless. How'd you get this far?
I am not trying to shame you. Because I've been there. I'm mm-hmm. just saying it's not your responsibility to go ahead and stop yourself. It is the adult's responsibility.
Yes.
So have your crushes, you know, but just understand that as a child, there are things that you want now that when you get to be in your 30s or 40s are going to be wildly different.
Mm-hmm.
Because of your age, because of your experiences, because of the fact that your brain is still forming. You are going to be a much different person when the number that your age is going to double, and you could regret choices that you make now.
Mm-hmm.
And just be careful of the people that you bring into your life, because some of those people are not going to have your best interest at heart.
Everything in your body is telling you to go, 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 right, now, mm-hmm. right? But you know what you have an abundance of? Time.
Yeah.
And your body's telling you yes, but your brain should be telling you no.
Yeah. Part of the reason why I'm not a fan of YOLO. You only live once.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it's one thing if you do that in your 30s. It's another thing if you do that when you're 15.
It should be you always live with your outcomes.
Yeah.
You always live with your outcomes.
Right.
So, okay. Would you want to hear my shocked?
Yes.
$4 million for this? And that's why I'm mad at you, Jen. $4 million for this movie. I hope that it made all of its money back in like the kitsch after stuff. Now that we've purchased the movie, we'll repurchase it several more times. Let's go online, find the merch, and like we'll get some of that for ourselves as well, maybe. I was thinking, I was watching this, and I already have like a fan art thing I want to do in my mind. Like, here's the end of my shocked moment. That's what's so shocking about it. Here's what it is. When you look at a Van Gogh or a Van Gogh, if you're British, back in the day, people would have looked at it and been like, well, that's a splotchy painting. That poor bastard can't blend for crap. But I wouldn't trade a Van Gogh. I wouldn't. It's a particularly unique work of art that has very sharp, unblended lines. Not unlike this movie.
Right.
I would put that value on this movie. I'm absolutely shocked at how cheap it was. I hope everybody made all of their money. Mm-hmm. We should write some very poignant letters.
Yes.
Of praise. I got stamps. Let's do it. Hey, applauders. Hey, applauders. My radio voice. Hey, applauders. You've made it to the end of episode 29 of Plotters. With all those parts and pieces, little bento box of geekery and knowledge.
It's going to be in time for Halloween.
Ooh, next one. Is it going to be spoopy? Are we going to stay with our whole science fiction deal? That seems to be like the whole freaking thing these days.
Oh.
I mean, we've dabbled in a little fantasy.
I'm getting ideas. Is it my pick?
It truly is your
okay,
pick.
Okay, I will go. I had a thought for our Christmas episode that I would like to do, but I might just wait until it comes around on me to pick around Christmas.
If you want to trade, or even if you wanted 2 months in a row, like, what am I going to do?
Well, because it would be like skipping a month, and then so I would have to like.
Oh yeah, I could do November, and then you could just do December.
Okay, so I get Halloween and Christmas.
I mean, girl, best, I would give you anything.
Best holidays.
I don't know. I get Thanksgiving, so I have an idea. If you torture me, I torture you back.
I don't know if I have. I don't know if it would be. I need to think about it. It'll probably be a Scooby-Doo movie.
If it pleases you, it will please me.
Yeah.
If it's only 40 minutes long, maybe we'll only record for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. Hey, applauders. Look at you. Oh, you're looking good. Oh, it looks like you pulled into work. So you should probably turn off this podcast and get in there.
Right.
Oh, hey, plotter. It looks like your run is over and you should probably do some cool down routines, you know, like get some stretches in.
Yeah.
They say stretching after exercise is more important.
We've been sitting here for the last 3 years, so I'm going to stretch my legs.
Mm-hmm. And we want you to know that we appreciate your time. I know Jen's going to be back with a bumper at the end, but also, you know, hit up our Patreon. Who knows what's going to happen with that? Could be amazing. You can shoot us your address. We won't be doing anything weird or gross with it. Might send you a sticker. Mm-hmm.
Email that
to shockedandblot@gmail.com.
Until next month, this is Jen McQuaid.
This is Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm.
And this is Shocked and Applaud. Thank you so much for listening.
Congratulations, applauder. You've reached the end of our walkthrough of 2005's Mirror Mask. We hope you've enjoyed our thorough reflections on this amazing creation from the minds of Jim Henson Studios, Neil Gaiman, and Dave McKean. Also, we're celebrating podcast book clubs this month, and we have a couple of great recommendations for you. Chick Lit is a literature comedy podcast who discusses books and movies they love and love to roast. And Not Just Any Book Club is a group of friends who choose their own book in relation to a new theme each month. Check out links to these shows in this release's description.
Hey, this is your audio engineer and Kermit the...
Sorry, frog in my throat. Jen, have you reviewed Shocked and Applaud on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.com? By leaving us a review or letting us know what you think of the show, you not only boost us up in search results, but you also give us a sense of fascination and wonder as we discover that there's actually someone on the other end. We hope you've enjoyed our back-to-back releases of Part 2 and 3, and will return October 12th with a brand new review for our 30th month-long episode. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay! Okay, now we did the whole thing, but backwards.